Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Okay, everybody, it's time to close out the week here on the Damage Report. I'm John Adirola. Brett Ehrlich is in studio as always.
Oh my gosh, you guys should see the happy half hour this week with Richard Dominus Strominus. That's a nickname I just made up for him. It's so amazing. We drink some of my favorite beers. So what you should do is go and buy some Hitachino White Ale. Mm-hmm. Watch it with
Which
us.
Which is not a sponsor.
No. And then also some Abbott 13. And then the one we don't mention is Firestone Double Barrel Ale.
And you can see all of these drinks on the Happy Half Hour, which is coming out later today.
Follow us, HHH on TYT. And I'll play a ditty on the harmonica later.
Okay, but not on this show, because this show is all serious all the time, except not
except
entirely.
Except for one thing, which bears mentioning. John and I are gonna play Pyramid later. John cuts his papers down like this, and I'm like, while you're at it, why don't you get rid of the corners like Battlestar Galactica? And so we have both done it in solidarity today. John, I'm really appreciative that you've done the same. He doesn't want to show, but look, here, these are his. That's
and now, his. Sort of thematically, much like the remnants of humanity, this show is way off course.
Bless
okay.
him.
So anyway, we do have a lot of news that we're gonna be talking about, regardless of what our paper looks like. We're gonna be starting off with some of the fallout from Trump's trips to Dayton and El Paso. But throughout the hour, we're gonna be talking about a lot of stuff. We've got Ben Cohen of Ben & Jerry's is gonna be coming on to talk about the new flavor that was announced in support of one of the presidential candidates. You probably guess who. We have got some absolute wackos around the country going to places they shouldn't with weapons and body armor that they shouldn't have. We're gonna break down some of that because there was serious concern that there could have been violence. We've got a candidate for the Manhattan DA position coming on a little bit later, an incredibly important race coming up very soon. And then threats against a comedian, which we'll be closing out the show with. But first, we launch into some of the news breaking this morning about Donald Trump, unfortunately. Apologies in advance. Donald Trump had his trips to Dayton and El Paso over the past couple of days, and they have generated some controversy because although at times he said the sorts of things that you'd want a president to say to the victims of terror attacks, he also made the entire thing about himself. He attacked politicians nationally and the politicians of the areas he was traveling to. And overall, it turns out this did not go the way his team wanted it to go. A source inside said, the White House aides privately admit that yesterday was something of a debacle, that's the trip to El Paso and Dayton, that these were not the headlines they wanted to see. And in particular, aides wanted him to go in and behave differently. The goal was for him to go in and get out with making as little news as possible. They envisioned a visit like the kind he made to Pittsburgh last year after 11 people were killed in a mass shooting at the Tree of Life synagogue. He was, quote, much more able to sort of stay calm there. Which is just the highest
praise. What a high bar.
To sort of be able to stay calm.
He almost did something.
He almost.
And the nearness to something is what was most impressive.
Exactly.
He never did anything.
And remember that that shooting was also, like the El Paso shooting, inspired by somebody who believed conspiracy theories about Mexicans coming into America. The invasion rhetoric caravans and all that.
Yes, that's what's so difficult about this. I mean, there's only so successful he could be. At quelling people's discomfort, fear, pain, and anguish because he is the one cited essentially by the killer as inspiration for the action. So it's one of those things where like if you're at the funeral and like someone you know who inspired the murderer of the person whose funeral it is, you're gonna be a little on edge. You're not gonna wanna see that person.
Yeah.
Even though that person really, like, they really wanna make you feel better, but it doesn't seem like they want you to be happy. They just want you to like them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is not the same thing. Although he really just, like, it sounds hyperbolic, but I really just think that he has a severely constrained ability to feel empathy. Like I just don't think
I believe that. It's utter narcissism.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where he can't fully understand why anyone's feeling pain.
Or what would make a person feel better.
But he looks for the positive reinforcement of them being positive toward him. It's just like, here's the thing. Like, in a hospital visit, there's two kinds of people. There's the kind of person who comes and makes you feel better. And that's what you want in a president. You want a president to show up and make you feel secure, calm, optimistic, like everything's gonna be all right. Mm-hmm. Trump is more like the clown that goes around bed to bed trying to cheer people up.
Yeah, which he does it for some people.
And it would, he's trying to make it be a distraction. And so when you saw that behind the scenes video of him and a hospital worker who's a Trump fan, that's where Trump felt at home. Yeah. Being like, hey, we're just gonna talk about stuff, my little shtick, mm-hmm. my little entertainment shtick that we both kind of like. But when he has to go in front of people who are actually in pain
yeah.
and need some kind of inspiration, he just can't do it. And he defaults back to his shtick. He's like, here's Beto's little thing and here's my big
thing. Hey kid,
thing.
You want a crowd-sized comment?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what he does. And it's very frustrating to watch. And yeah. I'm glad that there were people that called him out for it.
Well, I've got some more frustrating for you. Understand as we go through these and you've seen on Twitter he's been lashing out at people. I mean, even in the midst of the trip, and aides are saying that the reason is that he went to do this trip, he felt like he was being criticized, and so he did what he did, which is what he always does, which is just attack everybody. He could have just like hunkered down, like seemed to elevate himself above the fray, but he can't do that. He has no interest in it, even when it's in his direct political interest to do so. But in any event, I want to show you two things, and we did a version of this on the main show yesterday, where it was I absolutely despise him. I never try to hide that or anything, so I don't always trust my evaluation of the things he does. So I want to know what you think about this. So he posed at one of the hospitals with some of the people. They'd brought back an infant who was now orphaned because the infant's children, parents were killed. So it was brought back to the hospital to pose at the president, and here's the picture. And so Melania's holding the infant, just lost its parents, and he's taking a picture, and he's smiling, and he's doing a thumbs up.
Grandma's not. Or no, whoever that lady is knows exactly. That's my face. It's utterly ridiculous and inappropriate.
Yeah.
It should be a moment of solemnity. Because his reaction of being happy and giving that thumbs up, as you're seeing, is just, it's always going to be in that photo. Yeah. And that photo is taken in a moment after that child lost their parents.
Yeah. And look, we have no idea what's going to end up happening to that child. But the idea that, like, at some point, the child will learn the context of what was going on when their parents were killed. And we'll at least hear, they won't know anything of this time because it's going to be decades from now. By then, you know, Don Jr. will be president or something. But there will be at least some talk about the fact that he had seemed to be contributing to this rhetoric. And then to always have that photo of him with the grin and the thumbs up.
He's agreeing that he did have something to do with that rhetoric.
In any event, let's see.
Yes,
should we show the video? Yeah, okay. So here's a video of Donald Trump. He was asked about, you've probably seen the videos of the kids who are very worried now that they could potentially be shot. So he's asked about what message he would send to the youth of America who are scared.
My message to young children going back to school is go and really study hard, and someday you'll grow up and maybe be president of the United States or do something else that's fantastic. They have nothing to fear. They have nothing to worry about. In addition, we're in constant contact with states, with state governments, and they are really doing a great job. We have this so much better than it was 2.5 years ago. 2.5 years ago, when I came in, it was really not a good situation. I think we have a very, very good system right now. And that doesn't mean that there's not going to be some crazy person, but that's what we want to do. We want to take the guns out of the hands of crazy, demented, sick people.
I just love when he's talking about demented, sick people and he points to his own brain. Yeah, that was horrible because he was asked what message you'd send to kids, and he turned it into an attack against the presidency of Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Saying that things were much worse back then. It's completely factually untrue. The only changes we've made to gun regulations that he has had any impact on were in eliminating them. He very quickly came in and he made it easier for people with documented mental health issues to get guns. The exact opposite of what
something
he was implying.
Like 400,000 people to 800,000 people who would have been The authorities would have been notified about. He just got rid of the mechanism by which he would disclose that those folks are.
Exactly. And the whole thing was, we deserve more credit because it was bad before. It's much better now. It's factually inaccurate. We have more mass shootings now. We've had some devastating ones. There were mass shootings under Barack Obama as well, but there's been devastating ones now. They've chosen to do nothing. So, you know, when we had Mandalay Bay and the Tree of Life Synagogue and all of that, they don't do anything after it. And so can you be shocked that El Paso happens and Dayton happens?
No, he does something. He does it every time. He makes a speech on a teleprompter afterwards that gets like 20 people to say, oh, that was really presidential. And then he immediately undercuts it. He definitely says the words, we are going to do background checks. Mm-hmm. He did it after Parkland. He did it time and time again, saying we want common sense background checks. Yeah. Everyone kind of gets optimistic and thinks this is actually going to happen. And then nothing happens after that. But he does something in the wake of each one of these tragedies. It's just painfully inadequate.
Yeah, and entirely unproductive. Okay, really quickly, I want to change gears. Is there going to be anything in terms of gun control legislation, reforms of any kind? Well, we've been watching Donald Trump this week, and he's talked a little bit about background checks. We'll see about that. He tweeted this morning. Serious discussions are taking place between House and Senate leadership on meaningful background checks. I have also been speaking to the NRA and others so that their very strong views can be fully represented and respected. Guns should not be placed in the hands of mentally ill or deranged people. I am the biggest Second Amendment person there is, but we must all work together for the good and safety of our country. Common sense things can be done that are good for everyone. A message that sounds pretty good, but is undercut by the fact that he wants to reassure you that he respects guns more than any other person in the country. And the NRA has very strong views, which we are well aware of at this point.
It's just so weird. None of us know what's going to happen as a result of this. Will
I have an idea what if I was a betting man.
Well, will what we dread will happen? Is that going to happen? Where we know that the NRA is just going to call him and say, do you
they
want
have.
Money?
They have
called him,
called
but him. As a result of that call, he did kind of say today to reporters, the NRA is going to be, you know, respect or something, but he said maybe neutral. They might be neutral on this.
No,
but there is no tangible difference, sadly, between this shooting and the last one, which yielded nothing, other than there have been more mass shootings. But that doesn't seem to make a dent or change anything.
Yeah, I don't remember who it was. There was a tweet from back in the day where it was like, our hopes of meaningful gun control reform died the day that we decided as a country that gunning down dozens of little kids is fine. Like after Sandy Hook, I mean, look, there have been any number of crises, obviously. But that stood out. And we as a country said, maybe? No.
I blame
and then
the
we
Second
moved
Amendment.
On. The Second Amendment. How many mass shootings have we had?
I since blame then? The wording of the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is the dumbest, the most poorly worded amendment. All the other ones are like, you shall have freedom of the press. You shall, you know, you whatever the other ones are. They're very declarative.
There are some important
sentences.
Ones.
Sorry,
you should look into it. You know, searches and seizures, things
right.
like that.
There shall be no illegal search and seizures. Yeah. This one is. To serve in an organized militia of being important
it's
to
terrible.
The security of the state, clause, qualifier, kind of unrelated sentence, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be impinged.
Yeah.
It is a mess of an amendment. I think it's intentionally ambiguous. Mm-hmm. And it's
it
very
should be revised.
But the sad thing is no matter how well or poorly it's worded, the people who are advocating for gun control not to change, the NRA, they don't care.
Yeah.
They have distanced themselves so much from like any reasonable discussion about the wording, intention, framework of the Second Amendment that they just get to say things like Trump said, I'm the biggest Second Amendment guy there is, which is a nonsensical statement.
Yeah.
But he gets to say it, claim credits. He said the NRA are patriots.
Mm-hmm.
So
no,
are the people
not.
That are and trying to keep Americans alive.
Yeah, they're potentially the most extreme organization operating inside of the US because they don't care about this. They are there to ensure corporate profits for people who manufacture firearms. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't represent their membership, let alone any other reasonable person's country. Super fast, last point. Because I want to criticize someone other than Donald Trump in this block. So I'm going to criticize two reporters at the Huffington Post who in an otherwise good article about Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump and whether they might do something or not wrote this paragraph. The powerful NRA and its allies on Capitol Hill have long wielded influence, which is true. But the gun lobby's grip on Democrats started slipping some times ago. All that's true. And it's unclear how much sway the NRA and other gun groups still hold over Republicans in the Trump era.
It's insane.
No, it's not. That's just untrue. It's just untrue.
It's so
How could you write that?
It's so weird. And you need look no further than the polling on sensible gun legislation, which is so detached from anything. That's what's so frustrating when Trump said, we need bipartisan solutions to these things. That would make sense if the parties both represented the people.
Yes.
And they don't. We want solutions that reflect how America feels. Mm-hmm. 97-94% of America supports common sense background checks. It is the Republicans in the Senate who are stopping that from happening.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, we do have to take a break. We come back, lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
There was a scare in El Paso outside of the Casa Carmelita. This is a migrant community center earlier this week when a man with a gun and a knife and other concerning things was apparently, according to witnesses, threatening people. And so police spokesman Robert Gomez said just yesterday that a 21-year-old who was a suspicious subject was detained and interviewed before being released. He was reportedly armed with a gun and a knife. This is an individual who drove his pickup, which, as you'll see in a second, is plastered with a Rambo-like image of Donald Trump. He drove from Houston to El Paso on Wednesday for Donald Trump's trip to the city. Now, let's show you a picture. This is from when they initially took, control of the person. And it's just an image, but it really does say a lot. This individual is wearing gloves, like the sort of gloves that you would have to stop your fingerprints from being on things, hypothetically. You can see in the bottom portion, Donald Trump has been put onto the body of Rambo. And the image on the right-hand side it's difficult to read a lot, but you can see a supportive message about Ted Cruz. You could probably see the reference to the word fluoride. I don't know what else it says, but I'm pretty sure what else it says. And there is 9/11 was an inside job is written there as well. And so there you see a close up of the individual with Donald Trump wielding some sort of massive weaponry. And of course, he's doing the hand signal that totally doesn't mean anything.
That means white power.
No, yeah. It doesn't. That's them being ironic about it. That's all. Because you libs think it means white power.
So
now they are doing it to be ironic.
No.
That's the BS conversation.
I don't know. And it's the same thing I feel with Q. It's like, I'm just going to take it seriously, like whether you're trolling or not. Mm-hmm. It has been proven that your behavior inspires terrible actions. Mm-hmm. And when someone who is in the process of carrying out a terrible action is also doing that.
Yeah.
The one thing I just need to point out is, you know who's not like Rambo?
Donald Trump?
Donald Trump and Ted Cruz.
No,
they're not. Ted Cruz certainly not like Rambo, because Rambo wouldn't let you talk such trash about the guy's entire family. Mm-hmm. And then come back and be like, yes, sir, can I have another?
Rambo also not known for having bone spurs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that is 100% true. So there is this weird thing on the right where I guess it's just, it's the authoritarian personality. It's the desire to have a strong man. That is supposed to be a metaphor, sort of, or at least a loose descriptor in terms of their personality and the negative impact they have on a country. But they want to have a literal strong man. And so whether it's him or that right-wing cartoonist, I think Ben Garrison, when they picture Trump, he has to be muscular. He has to have a six-pack. I don't understand that inclination at all.
I understand the inclination to have that. That all makes perfect,
but that
sad, transparent
to think he
sense.
Does have
that's
that.
The thing is also if you're strong, you shouldn't need someone like that to lead you.
Yeah.
It really proves the detachment from reality that they're willing to allow to happen.
Yeah.
Like they want to show you the real thing that's going on. Oh, fluoride, they're doing something with the fluoride in the water. That's the truth, man. Oh, there's a deep state conspiracy trying to show that Donald Trump, like trying to hurt Donald Trump, man. That's what's really going on. Meanwhile, here's a fictional depiction of a guy's body.
Yeah.
Like that's fake.
Yeah.
You're making that up. You're also making the other stuff up.
Which, by the way, this can happen on both sides. We know that the Krasensteins had a book with Bob Mueller, and he had ripped abs in that.
Yeah, reason. I think it's stupid.
But anyway, quickly returning to the hand signal, I get what the conversation they want to have about it. But whether you're actually a white supremacist or you just want us to jokingly think you're a white supremacist, I would argue that those are not different things.
Yeah.
At this point. Okay, look, we're gonna talk more about this individual and the response from those at the Migrant Community Center in just a little bit. We do have to take a quick break. On the other side, we are gonna be joined by Ben Cohen. If political news has left a sour taste in your mouth, maybe it's time for something sweet. And we've got something actually. Ben and Jerry's legendary ice cream brand has a new flavor to commemorate Bernie Sanders' second run for the presidency. Bernie's back, and also back Ben Cohen, co-founder of Ben and Jerry's, joining us now on the show. Welcome back, Ben.
Yo, what's happening? Dude, lay it on me.
It's great to have you here. Man, I'm already in a better mood. So, this is the second Bernie Sanders flavor. So tell us about this new flavor and why you're getting into this.
Well, it's called Bernie's Back. The base flavor is hot cinnamon ice cream. You know, it tastes just like the atomic fireballs you used to eat when you were a kid. And it is hot cinnamon for holding politicians' feet to the fire, which is what we're going to do when we get Bernie elected. And then down the middle of the pint is a stick of butter crunch toffee in the shape of a spine. It's very stiff because Bernie's got a stiff backbone. And on the very top is this huge chocolate disc covering the whole top of the pint, representing all the money that's risen up to the top 1% over the last 10 years. And the way you eat it is you take your soup spoon, you whack the pint, you whack the disc, you smush it all around, and you eat it. There you go.
Wow.
Bernie's back.
So we've wondered for a long time if ice cream can be art, and apparently it can be.
Absolutely.
I mean, look, I instantly want to try that. How can I get my hands on a pint of Bernie's back?
It's a limited production flavor. It is it's under the Ben's Best label, my personal label. I'm making 40 pints. They're all going to be signed and numbered by Ben and Jerry themselves. They are collector's items, and they are available by going to justiceinallitsflavors.com and entering the raffle.
Okay, so I know.
Yeah, sign up to win, just like that.
I know what I'm going to be doing during the next break. In addition to launching this flavor, you had previously had Bernie's Yearning back during the 2016 campaign. Can we expect any more politically inspired ice cream flavors in the future?
Absolutely. This is just the first in a line of Justice in All Its Flavors ice creams that's going to be focusing on justice in all its flavors, just like Bernie, economic, social, racial, and environmental. So I'm very psyched to make those other flavors. I mean, this flavor turned out to taste incredibly good because you know, those atomic fireballs, I mean, they were good when you were 8 years old, but you tend to stop eating them when you get older. But if you combine that flavor into creamy ice cream, it rocks. I mean, check it out. I mean, try it yourself. Get a pint of vanilla, crush up a bunch of atomic fireballs, and mush it around, and you'll see what I mean.
Oh, I don't think that's going to be necessary. I'm getting one of those 40 pints.
There you go.
Signing up for
well,
that thing.
You're going to have to enter a lot of times. Stuff the ballot box.
Wow. Yes, I'm in whatever way I can subvert this election, I will. In the future, if I can make a recommendation, I'm sure AOC likes ice cream. Maybe talk to her. I think that could be a big hit.
I like AOC, but you know, in terms of turning our country around and finally have an America that works for working people, we got to get Bernie elected. Then I'll work on AOC.
Okay. So we'll plan for the future, but now we got to work. So you're also, in addition to you know, obviously manufacturing, I'm just gonna keep it real. You're not a sponsor or anything, but I grew up on the East Coast, so Ben and Jerry's has been my favorite ice cream for a very, very long time.
Hey,
I grew
right.
up on the
Thank
West
Coast.
Thank
you for your consumption.
Ben
Thank
and
you
Jerry's
for clicking.
No problem. But in addition to that, you are a campaign co-chair for Bernie Sanders' campaign. You know, how would you say so far? I mean, we're only like a fourth of the way through this campaign, but how would you say things are going so far?
Up and up, you know, in poll after poll after poll, Bernie beats Trump. It's amazing. They do these head-to-head matchups. If Bernie gets the nomination, what's going to happen? He's going to win. And, you know, having a guy like Bernie, who has been so steadfast over the last 40 years on issues of justice, economic justice, racial justice, social justice, environment. I mean, this guy was in the forefront of, you know, most any issue you want to talk about. Women's rights, gay rights, the environment, you know, economically talking about, I mean, 40 years ago, he was talking about how corporations have taken over the country. And, you know, this is the man that we need right now. If we're going to, I mean, you know, we have two choices. I mean, you can nominate someone who's like middle of the road and we're going to end up with the same old, or you can nominate Bernie, who is going to lead a grassroots movement to finally live out the dream of what America is supposed to be.
Well, we here at TYT, we are waiting with bated breath, and we will see how it goes. Ben Cohen, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
All righty. Good talking to you guys.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a short break here. We come back, lots more. In addition to the obviously incredibly important presidential election coming up and the battle to maintain control of the House and possibly retake the Senate, there's reform needed in a lot of other races that people unfortunately don't pay as much attention to, even though they are incredibly important. And one to definitely keep your eye on coming up in 2021 is the race for Manhattan District Attorney. The incumbent is Cyrus Vance Jr., but Cyrus now has a challenger, and that challenger, Janos Martun, joins us on the Damage Report now.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for joining us. Very excited to learn more about your candidacy. You know, as we alluded to in the intro, I feel like it's sort of a new thing where a lot of people around the country have sort of started to get how important these DA races are. And Manhattan, of course, is an incredibly important location for one. So talk to me about that position. Why the challenge against Cyrus Vance Jr.?
Sure. Well, you know, as a born and raised New Yorker, I am tired of seeing our progressive city continue to rely on jail and prison as a response to all of society's problems. As you alluded to, mass incarceration is a serious problem across the country, and it is here in New York as well. And in Manhattan, we have a three-term incumbent, Cy Vance, who has had no problem being tough on crime when it comes to locking up low-income communities of color, homeless people, people with mental health issues, but who has been a lot more reluctant and turned the other way when it comes to taking on special interests in the powerful, like the Trumps, like Jeffrey Epstein, like Harvey Weinstein. And, you know, I have a long track record of fighting for justice as a civil rights attorney, as somebody who's investigated corruption, as a leader of the campaign to close Rikers Island, and now at the ACLU. So I'm trying to bring a different vision for this office to Manhattan, as so many progressive prosecutor challengers, and now a few have been elected across the country are doing.
So you alluded there to Cyrus Vance Jr. In your words, going easy on some of these incredibly powerful individuals. But in your campaign messaging, you also draw focus to Cyrus Vance Jr.'s approach towards Wall Street. How would you describe that?
Well, he's very cozy with the rich and powerful interests in the New York establishment. And I think that's a big problem with why he's been so reluctant to go after real estate developers, why there have been such few political corruption investigations, why there's been virtually no investigation into Wall Street from the Manhattan DA's office. Vance Jr. is very connected to that company of elite attorneys. Many of them fund his campaign. The last time he ran for election, the average contribution to his campaign was $1,200 a person, and it came from a lot of the most elite lawyers in the city who represent those kinds of interests. And so we need somebody in the office who's not afraid to stand up to special interests and to powerful people, and also the other half of that, to make sure that we're not locking up people in jail and in prison who shouldn't be there, who should be getting help in the community.
So one component of your platform that I've read about is a promise to drastically reduce the number, or by a certain percentage, the number of Manhattan defendants in New York City jails. So what are you hoping to accomplish in that area? How big of a change, and what are some of the ways that you would pursue it?
So I'm committed to cutting the number of Manhattan residents who are in New York City jails by 80% from the current levels to the end of my first term in office. And that sounds like a really ambitious number, but the reality is there's a lot that we could be doing right off the bat. First of all, bail reform passed last year, and it's going to be implemented next year. And as Manhattan District Attorney, I would make sure that bail reform and other reforms are implemented so that people aren't locked up simply because of an inability to pay bail pre-trial. There's also a lot of work we can be doing to support diversion programs for people with mental health issues, for people who have substance use issues, and especially for young people who may have been at the wrong place at the wrong time, may have made a mistake, but ultimately should have an opportunity to get their life back on track. And so by making the 80% commitment, I'm saying that we are going to measure ourselves and hold ourselves accountable. The legal system is a messy and complicated place, and without goals like that, I don't think that we can be sure we'll get the outcome we want in the end.
So obviously, I mean, this would be a big reform. You alluded to some of your past in this area, but tell us a little bit more about your past and how that would inform attempts to reform this incredibly important position.
Sure. Well, I've spent most of my career working in the criminal justice space, working on police oversight, working in criminal defense, civil rights. Probably the thing that most people would be familiar with in my work is I was helped lead the campaign to close Rikers Island. Rikers Island is this horrific jail complex in New York City. And we launched a campaign at the beginning of 2016, led by people who have been directly impacted by Rikers Island. And at the end of 2017, we got a commitment from the mayor and from the city council to close Rikers. And we're sort of going through those steps right now. Currently, I'm at the ACLU. I'm the campaign manager for the Smart Justice Campaign, which is our national campaign work. That's why I have this map of the United States behind me. It's a 50-state effort to cut incarceration rates by 50% across the country. So we do work on things like bail, sentencing, and parole all over the country. So when I come to this issue of mass incarceration, it's from a variety of perspectives, from the point of arrest, how police are interfacing with the community, through the pretrial system, through how we sentence people. The United States sentences the people to longer terms than anywhere else in the world, which is one of the reasons that our prisons are so crowded. And then, of course, when people come home from prison, they need to have opportunities to succeed, or else they're going to wind up back in their criminal legal system. So these are all things that I've been working on for my whole career, and we want to bring that perspective to the DA's office.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. I guess I would say reform in terms of having progressives actually holding these positions is incredibly important, because as important as the federal positions are, DAs directly impact the lives of so many people every single day. And so, mm-hmm. Good luck in your candidacy. We appreciate you joining us, Janos, and feel free to touch base with us as the campaign proceeds.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We're going to take one last break here. When we come back, a threat against the life of comedian Sarah Silverman, and we're going to give you more details on the individual who'd been apparently, allegedly, according to witnesses, terrorizing people outside of a migrant community center in El Paso.
So I'd do it again. I'd do it again in a second. I hear his Birkenstocks clacking.
So there is a comedian Sarah Silverman talking about how she would kill Jesus again if she had the chance. So bear in mind, she's a comedian. That was a comedy routine. Some people forget that, unfortunately. And that joke that you just saw there led to her being threatened, as she alluded to in this tweet. Just briefly want to show you. She tweeted out, "This is Adam Fannin of the Steadfast Baptist Church in Florida, and he is going to get me killed." And she linked to a video of Adam talking about her. Here's that video.
You know, these Jewish false prophets, anti-Christian, anti-God, you know, they're willing to put Jesus to death again. You heard this comedian, Sarah Silverman? You guys know who I'm talking about? She brags about it. I'd do it again. Listen, she is a witch. She is a Jezebel. She is a God-hating whore of Zionism. I hope that God breaks her teeth out and she dies. She is a wicked person, and she is like the perfect representation of religious Judaism. She is Satan's scoffer, and she is there to take the world and make them laugh and then diss Jesus, to try to take away the respect from Jesus. And listen, we have to be on guard. We have to be vigilant against these type of people.
So I'd be concerned. He's saying that in public to a group of people.
You know, similar to how there are little comedy clubs everywhere, mm-hmm. hole in the wall, hole in the ground comedy clubs, there are also tiny, divey congregations everywhere. Mm-hmm. And just as in like those hole in the ground comedy clubs, there's people who tell terrible, horrible jokes to try to get like the cheapest laugh off the most crude joke that has no like extra levels or layers or anything. This guy is trying to appeal to that equivalent of that, mm-hmm. but in the religious community.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to work it every Sunday. He's got to come up with something new to say. Mm-hmm. And it's usually, you know, those jokes stay in the comedy holes. Mm-hmm. But this guy's, you know, what used to be in his little hellhole mm-hmm. has crawled out and might have an effect on Sarah Silverman.
So you're saying that he needs to work on his tight five?
His tight five. His tight homily.
Yeah.
You know?
His
homophobic homilies.
So that's isn't as much of the video as I really want to ever see of him. But he did go on to later say, "I pray that God would give her an untimely death, and it would be evident that it's at the hand of God. It would be obvious that God would judge her. I pray for the day." I don't know if he knows the whole God thing and the whole Jesus thing, because that's Jesus doesn't like that. The whole murdering comedians and making it clear that God had murdered the comedian.
Right. And actually what she's making fun of in her comedy routine is precisely people like this.
Yeah.
Like her just being, yeah, I'd do it again.
Yeah. Like, we should make this clear, because for him it's not. She doesn't actually want to murder Jesus.
Yeah, she's
a comedian.
She's in a character. She's doing essentially like a small character bit.
Yeah.
But it's just so crazy that people will take it seriously because their priority is not on truth. Mm-hmm. It's not on being honest. It's on being the head of a congregation and getting those people to follow him and feel like it's us against the world. And we're the only ones with the secret to save you. And I find that absolutely ridiculous, especially saying this is the problem with religious Judaism.
Yeah.
Wasn't Jesus Jewish?
Yeah, no, well, there was anti-Semitism running through every part of that statement. So the Republican Party is going to go crazy when they see this video.
Right,
because they take it very seriously. But in any event, I feel bad. Sarah's obviously scared. He's, I guess, legally allowed to say things like this, of course. But I would be concerned considering what's been going on in the country. So hopefully nothing happens.
Yep, I agree with you.
Okay, so we are going to turn back to a topic we started talking about earlier in the show. That is the individual who is outside of the Migrant Community Center in El Paso. We want to give you more details on this individual. The Casa Carmelita Shelter put out a statement about what happened on their Facebook page. We want to read you a few sections. They said, "When he was asked clear questions concerning our safety, repeatedly told us that he has rights." So this is the cops told the community center that he has rights. They now say, "What was that large bag of white powder you pulled off of him? Should we be concerned about explosives? Did he have a concealed weapons permit?" Police stated that the gunman has rights, that they cannot search his truck, and that they have no cause to arrest him. No cause to arrest him. "An eyewitness saw him brandishing a gun and attempting to enter our building. Women were fleeing down the street, warning neighbors as they ran away." Just a little bit more for now. "We watched officers removing clips of ammo from his person. One officer acknowledged that if they had not arrived when they did, Thomas was likely to have committed acts which would be, quote, a different situation. They released him shortly after on our block." He had ammunition on him as well, a big gun, a knife, gloves, powder for some reason.
Well, the gloves, maybe he's joining Blue Man Group or something.
That's true. You start, you're just like dipping your hand in the water.
What's the solution? The solution is to have someone near him with a gun for the moment that he does start shooting.
That is Sean Hannity's
intimidation
solution.
Intimidation and harassment are not okay. So yeah. If he intentionally goes with the purpose of intimidating and harassing, that is not okay.
Yeah. But I mean, this is, as we talked about in the break, you didn't hear, but this is the week after a horrendous, terrible terror attack on that community in that city. And his inclination is to go there to, at the very least, terrorize people.
There's an amazing BuzzFeed article going, I think it was BuzzFeed, where they went through and said, they tracked like when the Black Panthers would walk around with guns and how the right really wanted gun control at that time. Mm-hmm. And it was just fascinating because that's what it is. And yes, he has rights and so does everyone. But there is a wild difference between someone going to this location. I mean, the police should at the very least ask him to leave and get out of there.
Yeah.
And then the white.
Yeah, they left him on that block.
I mean, and this is a thing that I hear a lot from people on the right who still try to defend Trump amid what is very obvious racism and terribleness.
Yeah.
Is they say, you just don't like that he's mean. And it's okay to be mean. Mm-hmm. And then that translates in much larger proportion to people like this who feel emboldened to go out there and stand with a gun outside a place like this. And I just feel like we should all take a second and realize how crazy that is.
Yeah.
What a crazy thing that is to imply. And yes, it emboldens these people and they want to feel strong when they feel like they have lost something. But it's incumbent on us to call them out for every time they do it and just show how insane it is to go have your car like that, which you can totally do. These same people have truck nuts. Mm-hmm. Buy some truck nuts. Don't put the Rambo thing and bring
either.
A gun anywhere.
Don't do either. But yeah, so you talked about how crazy it is. Well, let's talk about how crazy it is because as of this morning, we know a little bit more about the individual who had been pictured showing the white supremacist sign. That totally doesn't say anything about your views on race. It's just an ironic thing. It's funny. It's from the internet or whatever. So reached my phone. He said that he often went to Trump rallies, but said he tried to be respectful of the high tensions in El Paso following the shootings, though he said he could not rule out the possibility that the massacre had been a false flag perpetrated by the government. So he tried to be respectful, but probably not that hard since he brought a rifle to a migrant community center. And he believes that it might not have actually happened. Or if it happened, maybe the government, which Trump controls, murdered all of those people?
So with this person,
it's hard to follow a little.
Speaking of flags, if we had some kind of red flag rule, should this guy be on it?
If he was not on it, like honestly, maybe he didn't mean to do anything. Maybe he didn't want to do anything or whatever.
Bull.
But it is impossible to say that he did not, that he could not, that it's not possible that he went there to do this and was stopped or changed his mind at the last second. But he had everything there. We've seen this story so many times. The first few chapters are all there, baked into the situation. The only thing that didn't happen was the shooting.
There's reasonable assumption. That is a term that's everywhere in the law. And I think it's reasonable to assume that a guy who did this was up to no good and legally so.
Well, let's give him a chance to explain some of the odder parts of this story. So he acknowledged that he was legally carrying a pistol, but denied waving it around and said the gloves and knife could be explained. I was eating prickly pears in his truck. So he needed gloves and a knife for the prickly pears. The white powder was a protein supplement he takes along with other Alex Jones branded nutritional supplements.
Cool.
I've never met this individual, but we know a lot about this individual, I feel like, at this point.
Go eat your powder
somewhere else.
Go eat your prickly pears in your pawpaw.
I've had a lot of protein shakes in my life. I've never eaten the protein in dry form in a truck on a trip. But also understand that this is not a lone thing. We're not gonna go into detail, but a rifle carrying man was arrested after causing panic at Walmart in Missouri late last night. He says he didn't wanna kill anyone. He just wanted to cause chaos. So the week after a big shooting at a Walmart, he took his gun to a Walmart. Seems like terrorism to me. And also, there was a group of mourners in El Paso. They were mourning the death of 22 people. And Trump supporters gathered they didn't say counter-protest, but they gathered around the mourners and shouted pro-Trump statements at the mourners of a terror attack.
They seem like
don't
really
call
cool
them
people.
Deplorable, whatever you do.
I mean, it's so bad. And then I saw like a Steven Crowder video earlier today where he's dressed as Trump. throwing things at the Mexican president, who he keeps calling, like, you know, Andy Garcia and Apocalypto.
Yeah, yeah. This is the week of two terror attacks, and this is who they are. It's pretty clear. Sorry to end on a down note. Thank you so much, as always.
Happy half hour tonight at 7.
A little bit later on tonight. Thank you, everybody, for the whole week. We'll see you on Monday. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.